This is called Our Time with the Pirates. It's a short story. Sometimes we still see it even now. Nights like this, sprawled on the deck of the mothership, stardust rioting overhead, waves spanking the hull below. We close our eyes and there it looms, our infinity, floating serenely across the insides of our lids like some pale-winged creature born of desire, luck, and dreams. Also a whole shitload of money. Farah, who has experience with such matters, says that this is not unusual, that loss is like a child who tugs at us from behind as the tides are pulled by their own lost child, the moon. Ruthie and I were not qualified to judge, but we know what it's like lying in the dark, chasing phantoms, running the mind's long finger over every slope and contour of what isn't there, your immaculate vessel with its gleaming stern, as if committing them to memory, when in reality, of course, you've already committed them to memory. The master stateroom with its island queen berths, the ensuite showerhead and separate vanity, the wet bar, the ice maker, the hanging lockers with their polished cedar linings. A 38-foot poem of holly and teak, that's our infinity, was our infinity. And are they taking proper care of it in whatever arid, miserable haven they've got it moored, keeping the lines taut, doing the requisite maintenance? If a ship falls to ruin in the middle of the ocean, who's gonna know? It's the kind of philosophical question you find yourself brooding over when you've been hostages as long as we have. Of course the pirates coveted our vessel. We did too the moment we saw it, slender and stoic in its dockside slip. We literally had to shade our eyes with the flats of our hands, all that frenzied sunlight spritzing off the fiberglass like a special effect. The day was warm, but Ruthie shivered beside me. From the depths of her throat came an animal groan. I knew what it meant. Here was our new baby. We were already on board, so to speak, but we couldn't show it. The game of negotiation still had to be played, so we trailed nodding behind while Irwin Marks, the soon-to-be former owner, gave us the tour, pointing out features and rattling off specs in a low, vengeful voice. Here was the Raytheon chart plotter. There were the new cockpit cushions, the freshly painted mast and boom. Three-burner stove, double steel sink, right this way. Irwin trudged from station to station, bovine and slump-shouldered, like a martyr bent under a cross. The back of his polo shirt was spotty with sweat. His legs, hairless and white as birch twigs, trembled under the mound of his belly. He looked like a man about to lose his chart plotter. Beneath the shadow of his captain's cap, his eyes were puffy and lightless, almost vacant, as if he were already gone. As if he, the great and powerful Irwin Marks, who'd made a fortune in software and retired early, had now officially absented himself from this tedious occasion, leaving the loose ends of salesmanship to this other guy, this droning, lachrymose docent we were all helpless to interrupt. The sun bore down. The day was like a net we were caught in. We floundered away for a while, Ruthie and I pretending to care about the questions we asked him, and Irwin pretending to care about the answers. We were all trying to be charitable. Poor Irwin, his portfolio was tanking, his son was in rehab, his wife was a pill, his own heart had attacked him. In the face of such hardships, we were prepared to do anything for the man. For the boat, though, we offered 20 grand under book value, take it or not. Irwin took it through clenched teeth like medicine. He knew, when you're stuck in a windless place and a golden opportunity sails by, you grab it. You're either a swimmer or a floater, there's nothing between. Take the stargazer. The stargazer lurks low in dark waters, buried in sand, almost invisible, but when a small fish floats by, he swallows it whole. How? The cunning little bastard has eyes on top of his head. That's his adaptation, his natural advantage. Irwin knew what that was like. He too had exploited his advantages over the years. It was how he'd made his name. It was how he'd wed his wife. It was how he'd bullied his son into going to boarding school and how he'd bullied the boarding school into taking him. For that matter, it was how he'd acquired the infinity in the first place, this glittering prize we already wanted so badly and were about to steal so cheap, and possessed so fleetingly, and whose absence from our lives we too, like Irwin, were already schooling ourselves to mourn.